From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief for July 7th. Wit here, July 7th. 7 pieces of comedy from the open web. Let's see what's stuck. Let's get into it. First, from the hard times. Classic rock DJ hastily throws on Enigada Darvida before unwrapping burrito. Altoona, pa. Local radio DJ Danny Mustang McGiven quickly pressed play on Iron Butterfly's classic 17-minute-long rock song Enigada Darvida before diving into his lunchtime burrito, ravenous sources confirmed. When you're broadcasting for hours at a time, sometimes you just need a break, said McGiven, dabbing at a blotch of sour cream on his chin with a paper napkin. I have the 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. midday slot, so eating lunch is always a challenge. But I've got a list of long songs I can play, depending on what I'm eating. Salads are easy, since I can eat the first half during, say, November rain. Then do a quick station ID, then finish it during won't get fooled again. But for something messier like a burrito or a meatball sub, I need to be a lot more hands-off in my broadcasting. That's where prog rock is a godsend. Longtime listener of the station Sarah Segura says she can often recognize when McGiven plays a tune to buy time. I've been listening to Mustang for a while now, so when I hear him throw on a super long track around 12:30 or 1 p.m, I know he's chowing down on a big sandwich, said Segura. Sometimes if it's getting late in the afternoon and I can tell he's getting hungry, I'll call in and request side 2 of The Dark Side of the Moon just so he can have time to squeeze in a meal. Ronnie Kunkel, a sound engineer present at the 1968 recording of Enigada Darvida, recalls that the band intended to create a lengthy song that would provide relief for radio DJs. Shorter tracks like Sweet Home Alabama or Born to Run are just long enough for him to take a piss. You can hear the relaxation in his voice when he rushes back to the microphone, but for a meal, he needs longer. Back in the 60s, most songs were kept pretty short, the thinking being that a short song would be more radio-friendly and be played more often, Kunkel mused. But Iron Butterfly, they had a different idea. They realized that these radio DJs were stuck at their chairs, sorting through stacks of vinyl and talking on the mic for hours on end. They were dying for a song long enough to give them a chance to step away to grab a coffee, or eat a snack, or chat up the office receptionist. So when Enigada came out, it was an instant hit. We had fan mail from DJs all over the country coming in, thanking us for the song and saying that their prayers had been answered. At press time, a satisfied McGiven put on Pink Floyd's 23-minute track Echoes as he prepared for his post-lunch nap. The post-classic rock DJ hastily throws on Enigada Darvida before unwrapping burrito appeared first on Hard Times. Next, second, from the Hard Times. Imagine Dragons tap the Wiggles and Raffi to open on upcoming tour. Los Angeles Imagine Dragons announced their upcoming nationwide tour would include supporting acts featuring the Wiggles and legendary children's singer Raffi, tour management has confirmed. We just wanted an authentic, epic experience for our fanbase, and we thought of no better opening acts than the Wiggles and Raffi. Honestly, we've wanted to do a tour like this ever since we opened for Sesame Street Live earlier in our career. I don't want to give away too many surprises about their participation, but let's just say you might see us all on stage during the encore for Believer and a new song we've been working on about brushing your teeth. Legendary children's singer Raffi was looking forward to touring again, albeit if a few reservations. It feels like we've come full circle, said lead singer Dan Reynolds. The members of the Wiggles and I mulled it over before accepting the offer, because frankly we could just go on tour ourselves and make just as much money. But when's the next time I'll be able to play Banana Phone in front of 20,000 people, said Raffi. Not going to lie, I thought Imagine Dragons just made commercials, but it turns out we have the exact same fan demographic. They are supposed to be making songs for preschoolers, right? I hope they don't think the Wiggles and I are going to be all buddy-buddy with them, because at the end of the day these guys aren't even close to being in our league. Imagine Dragons tour manager Brad Lorenzo was just glad he found someone to open. Thank the fucking Lord they signed on to open. The Danny Go. Folks laughed and hung up on me, and Christian Jacobs from Aquabats flat out told me Imagine Dragons was too immature, whatever that means, said Lorenzo. You have no idea how hard it is to book an arena tour where alcohol sales are going to be non-existent, so I'm hedging my bets on the legacy of Wiggles and Raffi to join to get these seats filled. Let's just hope the marketing team's plan to give away discounted tickets at Gymboree pays off. As of press time, the tour has been postponed after Raffi refused to work with Reynolds after his claim Imagine Dragons was bigger than Sharon, Lois, and Bram. The post Imagine Dragons tap the Wiggles and Raffi to open on upcoming tour appeared first on Hard Times. Up next, third from the hard times. Opinion: we need to destigmatize pistol-whipping randos in laser tag. In these contentious times, it is nice that we can all at least agree on what the two ultimate best things in life are: winning and laser tag. Why then, in 2026, are we still shaming people for giving a shit and trying hard at laser tag venues across the globe? If this were paintball or airsoft that we were talking about, I'd be 100% on board for shaming the sweats. Those guys are nerds and sickos. But we are talking laser tag, the greatest combat sport ever invented. Let the men be men. The stink eye I get from the depressed teenager working the front desk when I bring my own custom laser SMG and ask to hook it up to the house system before the game is bad enough. I do not need to hear bullshit about how I'm taking it too far from concerned parents after I do what I need to do to secure a victory, which, in this case, was pistol whipping a kid hard in the face when he came too close to capturing our flag. When I full sprinted out of the arena, skin bright red and glistening with sweat, to check my score on the monitor, I expected to be greeted with a champion's welcome. Cheers. First bumps. People telling me that I am their hero and asking me if I am single. I am. Instead, I have to deal with these losers looking aghast at me as if I just killed someone, or worse, lost. That is not the kind of energy I need on Medieval Monday at Laser Lair when I'm trying to be my best, most authentic self. That isn't the energy that any true laserhead ever needs. I don't care that I ruined your birthday and maybe permanently damaged your vision, Timmy. Some of us are trying to go pro. Grow up. 7 years old is plenty old enough to take important things seriously. I just think it is time that we, as a society, normalize trying hard. Don't we want people to be passionate? Don't we want to encourage people working hard to achieve their dreams? Don't we want the next generation to grow up resilient and hardened with a good sense of situational awareness? I, for one, will continue to be an exemplar of hard work and commitment in laser tag arenas across the nation, or at least in the 16 remaining states whose arenas I have not been permabanned from. The post opinion, we need to destigmatize pistol-whipping randos in laser tag appeared first on Hard Times. And then, fourth, from The Onion, Hostess discontinues physical Twinkies. Hostess just announced they are pulling the plug on the actual edible Twinkie, swapping the golden sponge for a purely digital version you can download straight to your kitchen. The company frames it as a necessary adjustment for the digital age, insisting that a 200GB download will let you enjoy cream without the hassle of shelf life or packaging. Their rationale is that only a tiny slice of the market still buys the physical cake, so why waste time driving to a store when you can stream snack time from your couch? They even hint at a future where the whole baking industry lives online, promising faster consumption and zero clutter. The press release, delivered with all the gravitas of a tech rollout, also notes that the license to your downloaded Twinkie could be revoked at any moment because nothing says snack security like a revocation notice. It's a tongue-in-cheek take on how far we've let convenience dictate even the most trivial parts of our lives. In short, the classic cream-filled treat is being retired in favor of a virtual snack that you'll never actually eat, leaving fans to wonder whether the real loss is the cake or the joke itself. Next, fifth, from McSweeney's Internet Tendency, why the Taco Bell meal for two is the only economic indicator that matters. Every year, economists gather in conference rooms to debate inflation, interest rates, and the future of the American economy. Meanwhile, I can determine the health of the entire financial system in approximately 6 seconds by opening the Taco Bell app. If the meal for two remains reasonably priced, prosperity endures. If the price rises dramatically, civilization is in danger. It is a system with a proven track record stretching back centuries. Yet mainstream economists continue to ignore it in favor of charts, graphs, and other forms of decorative nonsense. My methodology is simple. I do not study GDP. I do not examine bond yields. I do not concern myself with the consumer price index. Instead, I evaluate the economic stability of the United States using a single, infallible metric, the Taco Bell meal for two. Unlike abstract percentages and market indicators, the meal for two is a tangible unit of value containing burritos, tacos, and enough sodium to influence national policy decisions. To understand the predictive power of this indicator, we must re-examine global history through a culinary monetary lens. Traditional historians offer convoluted explanations for humanity's greatest crises. Yet the data reveals that every major geopolitical shift can be traced directly to a failure in late-night drive-through logistics. Consider the collapse of the Roman Empire. Standard textbooks blame barbarian invasions and currency debasement. This is revisionist nonsense. The Roman Empire collapsed because Emperor Romulus Augustulus could not locate a mountain dew Baja Blast within the greater Mediterranean basin. Deprived of that crisp, tropical lime-flavored nectar, imperial morale disintegrated. The legions did not fall to the Visigoths. They fell because the borders lacked a properly staffed 24-hour dual-lane drive-through window. Similarly, the Great Depression of the 1930s was not triggered by the stock market crash of 1929. The Great Depression was bad simply because there were no online exclusive combo deals. Had President Herbert Hoover possessed the foresight to introduce a digital app featuring a rotating roster of highly discounted cheesy items, the Dust Bowl would have been an afterthought. The entire decade of economic stagnation was quite literally just a 10-year software outage. We see this pattern repeat in modern times. The housing market crash of 2008 can be directly traced to millions of Americans purchasing suburban real estate without first asking a licensed lender how many Crunchwrap Supremes the monthly mortgage payment represented. When the ratio of subprime mortgages to seasoned beef fillings became uncoupled from reality, the entire global financial system folded like an untoasted quesadilla. The same warning signs were present during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Historians frequently cite Soviet nuclear ambitions as the root cause of the conflict, but recently declassified documents reveal that both superpowers were primarily concerned with securing a stable supply of Baja Blast decades before the product officially existed. Fortunately, diplomacy prevailed, and humanity avoided thermonuclear war through the strategic exchange of 12 Taco Supreme coupons. While the mainstream media continues to interview traditional analysts, a growing vanguard of rogue academics is embracing the truth of fast food forecasting. We have discovered a mathematical certainty when the cost of the meal for two exceeds the average American's psychological willingness to eat lukewarm cheese out of a paper bag in a dark parking lot. A recession is not merely imminent, it has already begun. Dr. Steve Reynolds, professor of cheloponomics at Arizona State University. Dr. Reynolds's research is heavily supported by his peers at the highest levels of shadow governance. The Federal Reserve's assistant vice president of Nacho Forecasting recently noted in an off-the-record briefing that the inverted yield curve is a myth. The true warning sign of a bear market is when the corporate supply chain forces a temporary substitution of standard nacho cheese for a slightly less viscous variant. Furthermore, the senior economist at the Institute for Crunchwrap Studies has repeatedly warned Congress that international trade agreements are completely irrelevant compared to the global distribution of fire sauce packets. A nation's wealth is not determined by its gold reserves, but by the volume of unrequested condiments left at the bottom of the delivery sack. I do not know who should be president. I do not know how tariffs work, nor do I care to learn what the national debt actually represents in terms of treasury bonds. I do not know why economists keep talking about quantitative easing when they could be talking about the structural integrity of a Doritos Locos shell. What I do know is that $15 currently buys enough Taco Bell to completely incapacitate two full-grown adults and one medium-sized horse. Up next, 6th, from McSweeney's Internet Tendency. America kept inviting me to her birthday party, but I just wanted to take her to the hospital so she can get the help she sorely needs. America kept on trying to get me to go to her birthday party. She does this every year, but this time it got really weird. She sent reminder after reminder, over and over again, that it was going to be her birthday soon, like months in advance. I've actually been celebrating for a while now, but I don't think I've seen you at any of my parties, she'd say to me, slowing her words. Oh, yeah, no, sorry, I said. I've been super busy, but it's my birthday. I'm 250. Happy birthday. Thanks. I thought maybe that would be the end of it, but she just wouldn't let up, and she got more and more aggressive as the day approached. Last week, she wobbled over to me, completely out of her mind, mumbling something about how the news is saying it's almost her birthday. They say it every day, she shrieked, following me into a Chili's grill and bar where she unhinged her jaw and ate a family of four. Did you just eat that family? I'd asked. Big birthday coming up, she said, letting out a huge belch. Girl, you're nude in a Chili's, I told her. You need to go to the hospital. Then she threw up dark sludge into a basket of tortilla chips. I got out of there as fast as I could, but later on, I saw her from my car, wobbling down the street and carrying a birthday cake. I stopped at a red light and tried to duck down, but she spotted me, shouted H-E-Y, and sprinted to my car as I quickly rolled up the window. The light was still red, though, and she managed to open the door to the back seat and get in. Uber for America? She mumbled, strapping a seatbelt around the cake. She then pulled a gun out of her purse, shot the cake, and passed out. "This is my chance," I thought. I could finally take her to the hospital and save the country. When I pulled into the parking lot, she jolted awake and screamed, "We're missing the UFC fight." Panicked, she pulled out a bottle of peroxide from her purse and chugged it down in one gulp. "Let's go do cannonballs in the reflecting pool," she screeched. I managed to pull her from the car, but she grabbed onto the door, completely out of her mind, eyes rolling back into her head, shouting, "Big, big, 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 big birthday." Somehow she pulled the door clean off. She's very strong. And I dragged her and the door into the emergency room. I approached the front desk. "There's something wrong with this country. What's her date of birth?" asked the receptionist. 7-4-1776, America slurred. "Oh, happy birthday." "Oh my god, thank you," America said, barfing out more sludge. A nurse took us into triage. "Is she going to be okay?" I asked the nurse. "No idea," she said. The sound of fireworks started to boom outside. America hocked up one last cough of sludge, stood up, and accidentally knocked me over with the car door. "Whoa, my bad," she said. "Are you okay?" But she didn't wait for an answer, distracted by the fireworks. "It's my birthday," she howled, throwing the car door at a glass door, shattering it. She then took off her pants and sprinted out of the hospital. We watched as America ran into the explosive, stormy night. A firework went off at the same time as lightning struck, and the shadow of a tornado could be seen in the distance. She grabbed the gun out of her purse and started shooting at the fireworks. "This isn't normal, right?" I asked the nurse. "I don't know anymore," she replied. "That's the 7. The joke is, you came back. Same time tomorrow."